So you've listened before?
Yes.
Okay.
I've listened to all of your podcasts.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
All of them. Great. It's my most listened to podcast on Spotify.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we're not after being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. I originally set out to have a goal for this year of one podcast episode a month. And so far, I'm quite a bit behind that goal. But that's okay, because I'm making this podcast for fun. And I do it when I'm inspired to do it. And that's just the result I've been having this year. I'm excited about today's episode. I interview another friend from childhood, Kristen Matthews. I actually did orchestra with her older sister growing up in the Sturgis public schools. And then I met Kristen when we both worked together at a coffee shop in town. And then we reconnected here in adulthood in the city of Kalamazoo, where we both live. I'm giving a lot of geography away today. We reconnected. She told me a story about her health as a woman who grew up with some health things. And then in adulthood, a lot of different health issues have been a part of her life. And I thought it was a really interesting story, and she agreed to be interviewed for the podcast. So without giving anything away, let's get into the episode. Okay, so abrupt change of topic, but when we got together and had coffee that time, like a year ago, you told me a story about how your body, like, turned on you, it feels like. Like, the way you described it was like...
That's an accurate description.
Like, come on, body, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So... if you're up for it.
Sure.
I would love to hear that story because it's a crazy one.
Okay. So when I was pregnant with my oldest, who is now 13, I had gallstones. And
is that common during pregnancy?
I don't know how common it is.
Okay.
I know of a few other people that have had that issue also.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's like a super common thing or
okay,
not.
All right.
So I had gallstones, and they didn't, you know, of course, didn't want to do surgery while you're pregnant. They're like, just eat a low fat diet and like do symptom control type of thing.
Right. You're going to have these through the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then we'll take care of them.
And then we'll take care of them afterwards. I'm like, okay. My oldest son was born 7 weeks early.
Whoa.
And, so he was in the NICU for 3 weeks and one day.
Wow.
And then came home, and we...
Nerve-wracking.
Yeah, we brought our tiny little... He was 4 pounds and a half ounce when he was born. He was 3 pounds, 7 ounces when we brought him home from the hospital. So we have our tiny little baby, and we were at my sister's house for Thanksgiving, which was my son's due date. So he was 7 weeks old on the nose at that time. And I just remember feeling so... sick. Like, I was just vomiting uncontrollably, and when I didn't have anything left to vomit, I was just dry heaving in, like, a terrible amount of pain. And I told my ex-husband, I was like, you have to take me to the hospital. Like, I'm making my peace with Jesus. Something is wrong with me. Like, so we left.
Whoa.
We left the baby with my sisters.
A seven-week-old baby.
And, he took me to the hospital, and they gave me a shot of pain medication in my hip and sent me home. So we went and picked the baby back up and went home, and 2 hours later, I'm, like, heaving into an empty coffee cup. Like, just stomach acid, like, because there was nothing left in my body. And I was like, you need to take me back to the hospital. And he's like, are you serious? Like, we just We just left like 2 hours ago. Like, and I was like, no, like, you don't understand. Like, you have to take me back to the hospital. So begrudgingly, like, we loaded the baby up and I called my mama Trish, who was the pastor's wife of this, you know, the pastor's son that I dated in high school.
Childhood church.
Yes. I lived with Paul and Trish after my mom passed away.
Okay.
For a little while. And they kind of have, like, adopted me into their family. Mm-hmm. And I just love them so much. Anyway, Trish is a nurse, so she met us at the hospital to take the baby. And she asked me what my labs were. And I was like, they didn't do labs when I was here last time. They didn't even put an IV in. They just gave me a shot and sent me home. And so Trish said to the nurse that was on duty at the ER, like, can I see her labs from when she was here before? Because the nurse was like, oh, yeah, we did labs and they were fine. And Trish was like, well, I want you to do them again. And, like, I'll wait until, you know, they come back so I can... Because something is obviously wrong with her. And,
You had Mama Trish with you this time.
I had Mama Trish with me this time. and the next thing I know, I'm being ambulanced up to Bronson Hospital from Sturgis.
Whoa.
Because my lipase levels, which is a pancreatic enzyme, were over 1,000. And normal is between 0 and 40.
Whoa.
And then I was in the hospital for, like, the next 3 months.
Like, overnight.
Yeah.
You had a 7-week-old baby.
So,
levels.
What had happened was one of my gallstones, like, lodged itself in front of my pancreas. And so nothing could get out of my pancreas. And my pancreas was basically just, like, eating itself.
Wow.
And I had a pseudocyst that covered the entire top of my pancreas. And it just, like, wrecked me. Like, I had then surgery to remove my gallbladder, and I had a drainage tube, like, in my side, like, draining the pseudocyst on my pancreas. And when they took my gallbladder out, they rerouted that cyst to drain into my stomach so they could take the tube out. And they told me, oh, it's just going to be like a laparoscopic surgery. You're just going to have 3 tiny incisions and, you know, it'll all be fine. I woke up from that surgery and I was, like, stapled back together, like, from my belly button to my sternum. Like, I was sliced open and stapled back together. And I remember just, like, screaming. Like, I went under anesthesia thinking one thing is going to happen, and I wake up and, like, my bikini body is ruined. Like,
wow.
So, yeah, that was, like, the beginning of all of my health issues because, so they had, you know, said I had pancreatitis.
What's that
from
mean?
My gallstone, like, inflammation of the pancreas. And,
okay.
So I had, like, severe pancreatitis caused from the gallstone that I had. And that just wrecked my pancreas to the point where it doesn't produce insulin anymore. So now I'm a type 1 diabetic and I'm on insulin for the rest of my life.
Because you had pancreatitis?
Yeah, from a gallstone.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was, like, the first, that's, like, the little...
With a 7-month-old baby. Like, you went to the hospital for 3.5 weeks.
Like, he was seven weeks old, and then I was in the hospital for, like, 3 months.
Whoa.
And
came home.
Yeah.
With a big scar.
Yeah.
And insulin for the rest of your
life. For the rest of my life. And then, you know, I get pregnant right after that. So,
whoa.
I get pregnant with my second child.
Oh, my goodness.
Pretty soon after that. So, you know, because I was waiting.
On purpose or, like, accident?
It was not planned.
Okay.
Eleanor was not planned. But, like, obviously I was, like, super happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I was
understand.
You know.
Yeah.
I need to have my quiver full. Like, I'm never going to stop having babies, you know? I'm going to have, like, 10 kids. That's what I was, like, convinced. Like, I'm just going to have so many babies, and it's just going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. You have a lot of love to give.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I got pregnant, and that pregnancy was...
Were you afraid of pregnancy? Because, I mean, the gallstones that couldn't be operated on during pregnancy were, like, really...
No, because at that point, I didn't have a gallbladder anymore, so I knew it wasn't going to get me more gallstones. Right. Like, I did not have that fear so I ended up having preeclampsia again, which is what I had with my first, which is why he was born early.
Okay.
Was because I had severe preeclampsia. So I ended up having preeclampsia again with my second pregnancy. But I carried her to term.
Wow.
And...
Because preeclampsia is not a joke. Like, I forget exactly what it is, but I know it's bad.
Yeah. It has to do with, like, your blood pressure and protein in your urine and stuff like that. Okay. So, but it can be, very dangerous. I had my daughter, my second child, and, I've been having, like, I got my first kidney stone when I was 18. So right around the time, like, I met my ex-husband, it was, like, that summer, I had gotten my first kidney stone.
As an 18-year-old?
As an 18-year-old. And I passed, like, 3 or 4 kidney stones a month.
Now?
So, yeah. Like, since I've been 18.
Since you've been 18, since you I've been do 18. 3 to 4 a month?
Yeah. And most of them are, small enough for me to pass with no problem. But I've had to have, I can't even tell you how many stones I've had to have removed. The last one was, like, this past fall. I ended up having a fever, like, on and off, like, 103-degree fever on and off for, like, 9 days. And they thought it was COVID, because everything was COVID at that point.
Yeah.
But my test came back negative, and I finally... told my husband Chris, I was like, I don't like going to the ER, but like, you need to take me to the ER because it's been 9 days and like, this is not getting better. So we went to the ER and they did like a like labs and like a blood culture and gave me like saline through an IV to like rehydrate me and then some pain medication and sent me home. And they're like, you might have a UTI. And like, the UTI is not causing this. Like, I know my body well enough. I was like, my kidney is killing me.
And I have a history of kidney stones.
And I have a history of kidney stones. So I get a call the next day from like the nurse at the hospital. And she's like, we need you to come back in because you have some weird stuff growing in your blood cultures that we took yesterday. And we're going to admit you to the hospital because you have some sort of like, raging infection going on, like from what's growing in your blood cultures that we took. I'm like, okay. So we go back to the hospital and they admit me to the hospital because I ended up having like a 7 millimeter kidney stone that gave me a raging kidney infection, which is why I had a fever for 9 days. So I was in the hospital for almost a week.
And this is like 4 or 5 months ago.
This is right before the kids started school in the fall because I was discharged that Sunday evening and they started school Monday morning.
Oh my goodness. Whoa.
So it's just, yeah. So I've had kidney stones throughout this whole time and, just like a myriad of like health issues. I've had chronic migraines since I was 13 and I was diagnosed with gastroparesis.
What's gastroparesis?
Gastroparesis is like a slow paralyzation of your digestive tract. So it is caused because you have damage to your vagus nerve, which is like a nerve in your GI tract. And mine is from my diabetes. Yay! but it can also just be like idiopathic too. Like,
I don't know what that means.
It
just happens.
It just happens, yeah. So, I dealt with the symptoms of that for about 2 years before I was officially diagnosed with gastroparesis because it's such a rare disease that they don't test for it until there's nothing else to test for.
Okay.
A lot of times they're like, well, it's Crohn's or it's IBS or it's, something else. Mm-hmm. And when they, run out of things, they're like, well, we have one test left. for this obscure disease, you know, I guess we'll try that.
Yeah.
So, but I was like vomiting 90% of anything that I ate or drank for 2 years. I got down to like 115 pounds. I'm only 5'4". So wow. I was very, very...
What are the symptoms? Like, what is it like to have gastroparesis?
It's different for everybody. But the classic symptoms are just nausea, like severe nausea, vomiting, like eating a few bites of, like literally 2 bites of food and feeling like you've like eaten the entire buffet, you know, like not being able to digest food. Like it'll just sit in your stomach and just ferment until you vomit it back up. Okay. You know, wow. Like bloating, like food poisoning times 10 basically right. Is like a lot of people's symptoms of gastroparesis. Wow. Mine was a lot of nausea and vomiting, like just couldn't even keep water down.
Wow, that's dangerous.
Yeah. So I was in and out of the ER, like just for fluids a lot during that 2 years of my life.
When was this?
I started having symptoms in like 2016, late okay. 2015, 2016,
four or five, some, 4 or 5 years ago.
Somewhere in there, yeah. I was diagnosed in August of 2018. And I had, my case was so severe that I had a feeding tube put in. I first had a nasal feeding tube put in, and that one kept getting like clogged. So they just put like a regular J-tube in my stomach that went into my the first part of my intestine and not into my stomach, because my stomach Whoa. Takes so long to digest anything that I eat. It yeah. takes me about 2 days to fully digest any sort of food. Liquids are easier for me to digest. I can't digest anything with fiber in it.
You can't have any fiber whatsoever.
Well, I mean, I can eat it, but it's not gonna digest.
You're gonna vomit it back up.
I'm gonna vomit it back up. Definitely. It will sit there and ferment in my stomach until I vomit it back up.
Whoa.
And I had a gastric pacemaker, which is like a pacemaker for your heart, but they put it on your stomach.
Okay. To make it pulse or whatever?
Yeah. So it sends like electrical kind of shocks into like your stomach. It doesn't help you digest food. It just controls the symptoms of nausea and vomiting.
Oh.
So that really has improved my quality of life so much.
Really?
Like, so much.
Tell me more. Like...
Well, like I said before that, I was like vomiting 90% of anything that I ate or drank. So when I had that put in, I had my feeding tube and I was exclusively doing tube feeds.
You didn't eat.
I didn't eat. No. Which is hard because I just love food so much. It's like my favorite, obviously, my favorite, yeah. favorite thing in the entire world.
This is a beautiful board, by the way. Thanks. So good.
Yeah, I've had like one cracker off of it, you know, the whole night. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I have had more than that.
Yeah. so, yeah, it takes about 6 weeks for your body to kind of, I don't want to say like calibrate to your stimulator that you have placed.
Sure.
Basically, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks for it to become effective and you start seeing like it helping you control your nausea and vomiting. So it was about 6 weeks for me before I started to see any sort of like change, you know. But by that time I wasn't consuming anything by mouth, so I wasn't vomiting, but I just had constant nausea all the time to the point where I was like dry heaving just because I was so nauseated. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so about December-ish then I started to like see relief and I was like cautiously optimistic, like, okay, I'm gonna try to like eat some solid food, you know, and I've had a lot of success with that.
How long have you had it in?
I've had it in since October 2018.
So a couple years.
Yeah, about 2 years now. So
that's awesome.
You can eat. Yeah. Yay! Yeah. I still vomit occasionally, not nearly as much as I used to, but it still does happen. Because I'm still learning that there's foods that I just can't eat, you know? like foods that I rarely eat that I don't even think about. Like, oh, I don't know if I've eaten that for a few years, so I'll try to eat it. And I'm like, nope, okay, write this one down in my food journal of things that I cannot. Journal? Yeah, I keep a food journal to see like what foods are safe for me to eat and what foods I know are going to put me in a terrible flare for like 3 or 4 days.
That's what you call it?
Yeah.
And a flare is nausea and flare. Vomiting.
Nausea, vomiting, just like bloating, extreme, just like abdominal pain. You know, to the point where, like, you don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
And it's terrible when you have, like, other responsibilities. Like, you have children to take care of. You can't just
not get out
be
of bed.
Out of commission. Yeah. So you kind of, well, I push. I have to push through that, which mm-hmm. is difficult for Chris, my husband, because he's like, well, how do I know if you're having a bad day? Because you're always in pain. But it's just like, how do I know the degree of pain that you're in? Right? And I'm like, I don't know.
You're always in pain?
I'm always in pain. Yeah.
In your stomach?
Or whether it's like my kidneys or I have some like discs in my back that are like degenerated pretty badly. So I have like a lot of like lower back and hip pain.
Oh, wow.
Or if I have like a migraine or like there's always something. It feels like there's not really a day that goes by where I'm not in like some sort of amount of pain.
What kind of pain are you in right now?
I am, my kidney hurts a little bit. Okay. But that's pretty normal. It's more like a background noise type of.
You've just adjusted to life yeah. with a little well, bit of kidney yeah. pain.
Well, you learn to like compartmentalize like. You know,
right.
I know this is not an emergency type of pain. Like, it'll be fine in a few days or whatever, you know? Like, it's not an I need to go to the hospital type of pain right now. Yeah. So, yeah. And okay. I mean, in my lower back and my hips are always
bothering
me, yeah. So.
Okay. So let me see if I can get this straight. 11 years ago, you got pregnant.
My oldest is 13. But yeah, 11 sorry, years ago, I was 13. Pregnant also.
Sorry, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
During that pregnancy, you got gallstones.
Uh-huh.
They said, we're not going to operate on these until after you've had the baby.
Yeah.
The baby was 7 weeks early.
Yeah.
Stayed in the NICU for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then you went to a family thing, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
The family was meeting the baby, basically.
Yeah.
You are having a terrible time. And you tell your husband at the time, take me to the hospital. You yeah. go. They tell you, oh, here's some pain meds. Okay, you're all set. Go home.
Yeah.
And then a couple of hours later, you went back with your... not adoptive, but sort of adoptive mother who's also a nurse.
Yes.
And she took them to task.
Yep.
And next thing you know, you're in an ambulance rushing from Sturgis to Kalamazoo to a bigger hospital.
Yeah.
Come to find out, your gallstones had basically shut down your pancreas, and your pancreas is like a working so hard it's going to explode.
Basically. Yeah, that's okay. A great way to put it.
Okay. And they're like, hey, we're going to fix this up. Snip you here, snip you there. And you're like, okay, cool. So you get anesthetized and then you wake up.
Stapled back together.
And you've got a giant cut down the middle of your belly.
Yeah.
With staples in your belly. And they're like, surprise, you're going to stay here for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And this is while you have a 7-week-old yeah. baby. Oh, my goodness. And then you go home as a type 1 diabetic for the rest of your life.
Yes.
This is on top of having kidney stones and migraines since you were 18.
Yeah, kidney stones regularly. Since I was 18, migraines since I was 13.
Oh, my goodness. And then, did anything happen between that and gastroparesis?
I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
What's that?
It's like a nerve disorder.
Okay.
It affects the nerves in your body. I mean, I have neuropathy also from my diabetes. It affects like the nerves in like my feet and my hands sometimes.
Like just bothersome or painful?
Both.
Okay.
Like I basically don't have feeling in my feet.
Oh, wow.
Unless, like sometimes, like it usually happens like as I'm getting ready to go to bed or like I am laying in bed and like just haven't been moving, then I'll get like these intense like sharp pains like through my toes and my feet, and it's just like terrible. But then sometimes it feels like your foot's asleep almost, but for the most part I don't have feeling like in my feet or fingertips sometimes.
Okay.
Like I can't usually feel like if something is too hot or too cold. Like I'll draw a bath, right? And I'm like, oh, this feels perfect. And Chris will stick his hand in and he's like, holy F, that is scalding. Don't get in that bathtub because you were going to burn. You're literally going to burn your skin off. It's so hot. And I'm like, no, it feels fine because I don't have any, like, I'll dip my toes in or dip my fingers in. And like, I cannot tell.
Wow.
Like, I can't tell that it's super hot and scalding. So same thing with like my heating pad. I like use my heating pad all the time.
For your lower back.
For my lower back. I sleep on my heating pad. And, or I'll, like, have it in my bean bag over here. Like, if I'm sitting out here, I'll usually have my heating pad wherever I am. And Chris will sit down next to me, and he will just, like, brush up against it, like, with his arm or something. And he's like, oh, my gosh, that's so hot. And I'm like, I feel like it's barely, like, I thought I was going to have to get a new heating pad because I didn't think this one was working because it doesn't feel hot to me at all. And, like, he will look at my back and he's like, you literally have lines from the heat, like your back is red and you have the lines from the heating pad like on your back. How can you not feel how hot that is? And I was like, I just don't.
Wow.
So yeah. It takes
what a, else what else. Oh my goodness.
Chris is such a great man. Just let me brag on him for a minute.
Yeah.
The very first time I met him, he took me to the hospital because I had a kidney stone. The very first night I met him, took me to the hospital.
Wow.
And when, like, he stayed around after that, I was like, I know you're the one for me, right? Because it's not easy.
He didn't run away.
He did not run away screaming the other way.
First date at the hospital.
He didn't stay with me at the hospital because he hates hospitals. Okay. He dropped me off and was like, call me when you're done and I'll come pick you up. And then he went and played Magic together. He had his friend's house. And so I called him when I was done, and he came and picked me up. But yeah, he stuck around after that. And he's been through a lot of my scary, scary health stuff with me. And not a lot of people would choose that. You know what I mean? Like, would choose to be with a partner that's chronically ill like I am. So.
Wow.
He's a great man.
I believe you. Seems like a great man. I mean, I just met him.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Seems like a pretty cool guy to me.
Yeah. He's great. So.
Okay, so. anything else?
No, I think that about covers it.
Okay, so to sum up my, like, long list of Kristen's, like, body, like, turning on her. Gastroparesis is the most recent thing.
Yeah.
And that is where your stomach doesn't digest correctly.
Yeah, it's like a paralyzation of your stomach and digestive tract. And there's no cure for it. Right. There's just symptom management.
Symptom management.
Yeah, like this is never going to go away.
And you've got basically this device on there that pulses to keep the digestive system, like, working in some capacity.
It controls the nausea and vomiting.
Okay.
That's the only thing that it does.
And that's the control symptom those control.
Two. Yeah, that's the symptom control.
Got it.
Yeah.
And even with that, you basically have to be very careful what you eat or drink because you're still learning what...
Yeah, 2 years in, I'm still learning there's just foods that are, like, trigger foods for me, foods that I can't eat. My diet, this is terrible, is a lot of junk food, like empty carbs, calories, white carbs, like bread, potatoes, rice, chicken, and sometimes dairy, depending on what it is. You know, like, it's very... Right.
You can't do vegetables.
I can't do any vegetables.
Fiber.
I can't do fruit, like, fresh fruit.
Oh, my goodness. That's got to be so hard.
You know, and it's... Every person with gastroparesis is different. Like, there's some people that can eat fruit or certain vegetables with no problem. I'm not one of those people. There's some people that can't drink, like, carbonated beverages. But I can drink carbonated beverages with, like, no issue at all. So it's just... It's a really weird disease that is not standard across the board, which is really difficult for it to be able to, quote unquote, be treatable, you know, because everybody is different. So
are you mad at your body? Like, how do you feel towards your body about all this? Because it seems like it put you through a lot.
It has. You know, I spent a lot of my life being angry at different things. Yeah, I think that there's a big part of my life that has been certainly impacted by all of my health issues. I don't know that I would say, like, there's days when I'm very upset and I'll like cry to Chris. I'm like, why me? Like, I just want to feel normal and healthy. Just give me one day where I don't have any of my health issues. Like, that's all I want is just, like, one day, you know, and that day is never going to come. Like, so I feel like I've kind of made peace with
this is me.
There's no sense in me, like, crying about it every single day, because that's not really going to change anything for me.
Right. I mean, you've had this stuff for a while now.
Yeah. And there definitely was a grieving process for me for each of the new health things, because I'm like, okay, well, there's just another thing I can add to my list of things that are wrong with my body, and I'm not even 35 yet. Like,
wow.
How has all of this stuff happened to me, you know? And it's odd because, like, my three sisters don't have any of these health issues.
None of them.
Nothing. Jeez. And I'm, like, getting all of it, you know? So, and, yeah, it's difficult because, like, just looking at me or, like, passing me on the street, you wouldn't know.
No, yeah.
Like, I don't like have, like...
Average, I mean, not like in a bad way, but yeah. Like nothing notable.
Yeah.
As far as health issues go.
Yeah. Because I don't have my feeding tube anymore.
That's right. You didn't eat for a while.
Yeah, I did have that removed. Valentine's Day 2019 was when I was able to have my feeding tube removed because I was able to eat solid food. I think it was like, I had been eating solid food for like 6 weeks or something at that point, and my surgeon felt like it was an okay time to pull my J-tube. So, but yeah, I mean, it's difficult because, yeah, like, people don't know. A lot of people don't know just by looking at me that I have all these issues going on. So it's kind of a lonely thing. Like, people just don't understand. I don't expect people to understand because a lot of these things you're like, are you serious? Like, how?
Yeah, I'm like incredulous hearing it all.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Like, it's not one or two things.
It's like one on top of the other. Yeah. And I'm like, if I was hearing this from somebody else, I would be like, are you serious? Like, really? You know?
Really?
Okay. Having, like, because it's just, like, you can't fathom how it's even possible. You know what I mean? And I know that there's a lot of other people that have a ton more, you know? But I'm not going to say, like, you know, there's always somebody that has it worse. you know, because I'm like, I feel like I have it pretty bad some days, you know, like I'm not going to downplay.
Right.
Like, I'm allowed to feel like my life is complete crap some days, you know, and like, yeah. I wish it was different. Like, I feel like that's completely normal and a part of the grief process when you're chronically ill. But at the same time, like, yeah, you want people to understand, but there's not a lot of people that will take the time to kind of understand that. Or if, like...
Do you want people to understand?
I mean, if they're inclined to do that.
Do you prefer to keep this to yourself? Or is it something that you're okay sharing with people and, like...
Oh, I don't have any problem sharing, like, my health issues.
Okay.
With people at all. Like, I can talk about my crazy health stuff, like, till the cows come home, you know?
Okay.
It's actually a lot easier for me to talk about my health stuff than it was for me to talk about my first marriage.
Okay.
There's no, like...
Right. And you, it sounds like you're, like, you refer to it as your crazy health stuff. Like, yeah, this is just my crazy life, my crazy health stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Why is that easier to talk about than the whole... first marriage religious stuff?
I think because there's not any sort of like shame attached to it, like guilt and shame and like stuff like that. Like it's not taboo in the church to have health issues.
Yeah.
You know?
Got it. That makes sense.
People expect that you can just pray it away, you know? If you pray enough, then, you know, you'll be healed or whatever. But I don't know that I necessarily subscribe to that belief, because I'm like, I did plenty of praying like in my earlier days when I was still a part of the church and I was still having, you know, but then you get, well, there's a reason. Mm-hmm. God will never give you anything that he knows you can't handle. And I'm like, I can't handle any of this, like, on my own. there would be no way.
Yeah.
No way. If I didn't have the support system that I have in place right now.
Yeah.
There would be no.
So what's that support system? I mean, you've got an incredible husband.
I do.
Who takes you to the hospital whenever you need, even if it's on the first date.
Yeah. I do have a very close group of friends.
Awesome.
That I've made since we moved up here to Kalamazoo about 5 years ago. That I basically met through my kids' school.
Okay.
I was very heavily involved in PTO and stuff when we first moved up here, because I felt like that was a way for me to make friends, because I didn't know how to make friends as an adult.
Well, and that was something that you did as service work in your church, like working with children.
Yeah. So, I was at the school all the time. Like, they joked, like, we should just keep a cot in the back for you because you're here all the time, you know? And so that was really... like kind of the building block of the group that I, of close friends that I have now that are like my support network, my tribe, I call them. And, of course, like a few of my sisters and my mama Trish and, you know, close friends. Like I like to say, like, I have a lot of acquaintances, but like my group of friends, like my circle of friends is very small.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Are your kids part of your support group? Like, do they understand your health stuff and that you're not normal? Or what is their relationship in all of this?
I feel like since it started when they were so young, that it's just kind of what they have grown up.
Who,
like,
mom
they,
is.
Yeah, it's just who I am. Like, they haven't known me as a healthy person. You know what I mean? Like, I've always had... that's crazy to say out loud, but... I think about it and, like, it's true. Like, they've never known me without any health issues ever.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it's hard for them, like, when I have to go to the hospital or, like, when I'm admitted to the hospital and they have to come to the hospital to see me. I mean, it's especially hard for Eleanor, my daughter, my middle child. She's very much my, like, little clone. Like, very just emotional. You know, she is just very
empathetic.
Empathetic,
hard
yeah.
to see yes. mom in pain.
Yeah. You yeah. know, she's like, she was my one that was like, I'm afraid you're going to die. Like when I was in the hospital having surgery a few years ago, you know, and she had a lot of anxiety that revolved around that. But again, during that period, one of my great friends stepped in and got her a book on a children's workbook on how to work through anxiety in your feelings. And, you know, so like, I'm not the only one that's looking out for my kids in this situation. It's great to know that I have my close friends that are not just supporting me, but also supporting my kids through the hard stuff too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
And Chris, who doesn't have any children of his own, you know, has really stepped up and is just wonderful.
How long have you been with Chris?
6.5 years, about.
Okay. Yeah. So about the same amount of time as your first marriage.
Yeah. So Chris and I have been together about 6.5 years. We've been married. We got married September 9th of 2018.
Okay.
So we've just been married almost 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So he's a great guy.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
It's fun to see you smile yeah. that big.
I'm very...
You got a big smile on their face.
Yeah. He's... I can't imagine my life without him now. And I know that sounds super cliche to say, but like I just...
But you had... you had to become your own independent single mom woman.
Yeah.
And so you... That is kind of a new Kristen's, like, to now be attached to someone... like you are to your husband.
Yeah.
Where you can't imagine life without him.
Like I can't.
That's a close bond.
And Chris has encouraged me to be my own person.
Sure.
You know? Whereas that was not encouraged at all in my previous relationships. Even the relationships that I had, like, between when I was going through my divorce and when I met Chris. I dated some terrible people.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I was back into that abusive cycle and with the guy that I dated through my divorce and a little bit after. It was just a bad situation. And, like, it was not like he was like, I don't want you to talk to your friends. I don't want you to talk to your sisters. You know, like, your focus needs to, yeah, your focus needs to be on me. And he also had a personality disorder, which he was upfront with me about. When we started dating, and I was like, oh, it's nothing that I can't handle, you know?
Sure.
Because I am used to taking care of people. Like, that's just in my nature to do, like, to be in a kind of, like, caretaker role. It's just my personality type. So, but it was very not what I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just bad. He ended up, like, breaking my nose at one point, and there was just a lot of...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, manipulation. He would threaten to, like, shoot himself, you know, if I did this, or if I did this, or if I were to ever leave him, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that was just a terrible, like, part of my life. And I'm like, why didn't I recognize these red flags? And now I'm kind of stuck here. So, but that worked itself out. He hitchhiked to the airport in Grand Rapids because he was going to be, like, arrested. So he went back to the state that he was from.
Okay.
So, I mean, that worked itself out, thankfully. I can't imagine where I would be if that hadn't worked itself out the way that it did. So, I don't want to say, like, that I would be dead, but, I mean, it's a possibility. Like, it could have happened. It was, like, that volatile. So, to be now with a man like Chris who, I don't want to say, like, he doesn't get angry, because he has, like, those emotions, but, like, it's never to the point where, like, it's a volatile moment. Like, I will never have to worry that he will ever, like, hit me or anything. Like, in the 6.5 years that we've been together, I think I've only heard him yell, like, twice. And I'm, like, not used to it. And I'm, like, I'm ready to, like, have an argument, right? I want to have, like, a heated argument because that's the only thing I've ever known.
Yeah.
Like, arguments, like, to have an argument, you have to be screaming at the other person. Like, I thought that was normal. Like, I didn't know what it was to, like, have a man who's, like, I'm not gonna, nope, I'm gonna walk away until we're both calm. And I'm, like, I'm never gonna be calm. Like, who do you think you are? You know? And he's just, like, no, like, I'm not gonna go there. He's not, he's just not that. That kind of person, which usually leads to our arguments, like, being drawn out because he's like, I'm not going to deal with it when my emotions are at that level. Like, I'm going to wait until things cool off. And I'm like, no, it needs to be resolved right now.
Yeah.
Because if we don't resolve it now, it's never going to get resolved, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something that we've had to work on, you know, the past 6 years.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's been just completely different, but wonderful. So.
I love it.
Yeah.
I like that smile. That's neat to see you say that. That's great.
I'm allowed to feel like my life is complete crap some days. Listening back to the episode, I hear that quote of Kristen's, and I feel like there's a lot of wisdom there. It's okay to be a positive person and also to have bad days and to recognize that you're having bad days and to feel them, process them, and then most importantly, then let them go. But it is important to feel that and to know that there are crap days. I really appreciated hearing that in the episode and getting that bit of wisdom in my day-to-day. Some exciting news. A Simple Life with Michael Jefferies was added to FeedSpot's list of top philosophy podcasts recently. If you'd like to see that list, visit blog.feedspot.com/philosophy_podcasts. And you can see where we come in on that ranking and learn more about other podcasts related to philosophy. If you are interested in becoming a guest on A Simple Life with Michael Jefferies, I'd love to consider you. Visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information and maybe a little bit about your story. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jefferies, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating on iTunes, or best yet, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.